Hey, listeners, if you're like us, there are things that are a part of your youth ministry that you are required to do that just doesn't feel like it's youth ministry. They tend to fall in that category of things in your job description that is titled Other Duties as Required.
And we want to hear from you. So head on over to our website, eclectic.com, and click on Duties to share your story with us. And we're going to pick the best story this week, and we're going to send you a free set of all three books of Marco that we talk about in today's podcast.
So send us those stories.
Good luck. Welcome to Eclectic, the podcast about anything and everything youth ministry, you name it. I'm Rob Brower.
And I'm Scott Davis.
That was like the sports announcer, Scott Davis.
Yes, it was.
Speaking of sports, man, football season has started.
It has.
And I'm a Seahawks fan. Are you a Seahawks fan?
Oh.
I know you're a Seahawks fan.
Yes. Like, it hurts that you even ask.
No. I was asking for our listening audience.
Yes.
For them to know that we are both Seahawks fans and not bandwagon fans.
No.
I mean, we suffered through like the Dave Craig era. I mean,
I've been a fan since I was six.
Six. Okay. Admittedly.
That goes back to 1976 when they started.
Yes. Admittedly, I was a Raiders fan at first. I mean, you know, one of my sports icons was Bo Jackson, and so I was a Raiders fan. However, after Bo got hurt, and I realized I don't really like the Raiders. I really liked Bo Jackson, and I didn't want to be a Seahawks fan. And my dad, he got tickets to the Kingdome to go watch them play the Kansas City Chiefs. We used to play the Chiefs, and I remember there was that guy in the overalls dancing. And I was like, what a weirdo. And then there was these fans, and the wave started going around, and I got caught up in all of that. And I started rooting for the Seahawks, and they beat Kansas City. And I was like, yeah, and, you know, and they won me over. And then I was in for a lot of years of pain because we went through an era where we were just terrible. Couldn't win anything.
An era also known as its entire existence until recent years.
Well, yes. But, I mean, but it seemed like we used to be the wild card team that couldn't. I mean, that was all the time.
Yeah.
We got as excited for a wild card match as some people did for the Super Bowl.
Yes.
I mean, it was like, yes, we got a wild card game.
Yes.
We lost.
Yes, we would be like three-peat for the wild card match. As opposed to, while the Bulls were winning multiple championships, we were in multiple wild cards.
We were.
I know I crossed sports there, but
that's what
came to mind.
It's okay.
No, the Raiders, you know, there are a few teams in professional sports that I hate. And the Raiders
are one of them.
Yes, it's a strong
word. And now they've got Marshawn
Lynch. And I have strong emotions behind that word. And yeah, now they have Lynch. And so I'm perplexed because, so here's one of the funny things about the Raiders, though. There's a guy years ago when I was a kid that played for the Raiders whose name was Scott Davis. And I was so excited when I found out that this guy existed. I mean, there was a tennis player whose name was Scott Davis, but I you know, like, that's cool and all, yeah, but it's tennis. I don't really care. not to offend any tennis fans out there.
Too late.
Just not my sport. Until I actually tried playing it, then I realized, oh my goodness, it's tough. So anyway, but as a kid, you know, Scott Davis tennis player, meh. Scott Davis football player, okay, now we're talking. But he played for the Raiders, right? So fast forward all these years.
Yeah.
There's a couple that attend our church, and their last name is Davis, and I was talking with them recently, and they're actually related to, I think he's like a nephew or something like that.
Whoa.
He's that they're related to, or no, not a nephew, a cousin, I think. But yeah, they're actually related to that Scott Davis from the Raiders. So,
well, that's interesting.
But with Lynch going to the Raiders, I am a Lynch fan.
Yeah.
And I do think it's cool for him to be able to finally, you know, truly end his career playing for the team that he's always loved. And so I get that. So there's a little bit of coolness in that for me. But they're still the Raiders.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know. I think the Oakland Raiders are kind of too easy to hate on. And so I'm trying not to hate on them because I don't want to hate on Marshawn. But I'm glad the Seahawks won.
Yes,
just won that preseason game, and they were looking pretty good. Even our third stringers were looking decent, like they knew what they were doing.
Very cool.
It was a good win. I considered it a birthday present.
Aww.
Well, a belated birthday present. Just had my birthday.
Happy birthday to you.
Okay, we don't want to pay any royalties on that song, so I don't want to not sing the whole
Who
thing.
Owns it?
I don't know. I think it's public domain.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Scott, dear Rob. Our listeners don't want to hear you say. Happy birthday to you.
At least it wasn't the Marilyn Monroe breathy. Yeah.
Happy birthday. Okay, no,
dude, that was not an invitation to start singing it that way in case you took it the wrong way. Please stop. No, but I just celebrated my birthday. And as a sports fan, somebody asked me, hey, which birthday is this? I said, Jackie Robinson. And they got it. They got it.
Nice.
Do you guys get it? Jackie Robinson.
I didn't hear anyone responding.
No. Okay. Well, you can Google it. Yeah. So I just had my birthday.
Awesome.
I'm another year older. Not necessarily wiser, but definitely older.
Maybe wiser.
I might be.
You might be. But you might not be.
Wisdom is one of those things that you don't realize you have until you realize that you needed it previously.
I don't know where you were going either. That sounded like it might be cool, but at the same time, huh?
I don't know. I had a thought. You know where I was going with it.
It started in the right direction.
It's like one of those things that you don't have it when you need it. Is kind of what I was trying to go, but make it a little wordier that you don't have until it's too late.
Yeah,
you know, kind of thing.
You think you've got it when you need it, and you.
Yeah, it's the same thing. So, I was going with that whole you don't realize what you've got until it's gone. It was kind of like you don't realize that you need it until it's too late.
Don't have it.
But anyway, speaking
once
of wisdom,
once you realize you don't have it, you probably have more than you think,
or not.
Yeah,
you can quote us on that.
Yes.
Speaking of wisdom,
you may not want to.
If you listen to the last podcast, you know that we've been talking about wisdom that we found in this 3-pack of books by Mark O. A Volunteer Youth Worker's Guide. The last one was A Volunteer Youth Worker's Guide to Understanding Today's Teenagers. And the one that we're touching on in this episode is A Volunteer Youth Worker's Guide to Leading a Small Group.
Yep.
Man, small groups. That's a loaded term. It is. And we mentioned in the last podcast that these are kind of thin books. And they're not all-inclusive, and they're not like the Bible of, you know, youth workers' books.
I like how you did that multilingual there.
Yes. But they are kind of the nuts and bolts, and they're going to give you a little bit of everything that you need. One thing that we didn't talk about, and maybe we were going to talk about it after the third podcast, but we can mention it now, is this is the type of resource that I recommend if you are a youth pastor and you have youth volunteers. This is the type of resource, if you're looking for a youth volunteer gift, I'd highly recommend. The 3-pack of them is about $20, depending on where you go, whether you find it on sale or not. And it's put out by Barefoot Ministries, which is a part of a Nazarene publishing house, now The Foundry. And I'd highly recommend them. And that's why we decided to talk about them.
Yeah.
But small groups, man. Can I start by saying I know the value of small groups.
Yes.
I was in an awesome small group when my wife and I were dating, and a small group leader kicked me out of the group. He said he went to a leadership conference and came back and said, dude, I'm kicking you out of my group. I said, why? He said the takeaway that I had from this leadership conference was that the most important thing for a leader to do is develop other leaders. So identify that person in your group, kick them out. And so he did. And so I had to fly the nest, and my wife and I started leading small groups. And I got to say, it was the best thing that he ever did for me, because I had certain leadership skills that I didn't know I had, and I had value to add and to share with other people. And I wasn't doing so. I mean, I was adding to our group, but we didn't need two qualified leaders in that group. And that's
one of the problems with a lot of small group systems. And I'm talking in general, not necessarily specifically just youth, but in general, it can include youth. But there's a lot of people sitting in small groups that have the great capacity to lead a dynamic small group, but for whatever reason, fear, ignorance that they have the ability, or just they really like the closeness of the group that they have, and so it becomes a closed group. But for whatever reason, they aren't stepping out to start a new one.
Closed groups. Oh, man. We're restructuring small groups in our church right now, and we just relaunched home groups. And there were some people that were upset because we said these are the guidelines if you're going to be a an actual home group sponsored by the church with access to our resources. These are the guidelines that you have to follow. And so, like a knitting group that gets together on Friday nights and knits, well, that's not a home group. I mean, it's an affinity group, and you can get together and you can do that. You can spread the word, but you know what? We're not promoting that in the bulletin. We're getting too big, and we've got too many home groups that we can't just start saying, oh, yeah, I don't want to throw out a name because inevitably it'll be somebody actually in our church that has that name. But, Adam's small group over here that is playing, cricket on Friday nights. And
boy, Eve's, you really are going to the extreme sure you don't, connect accidentally to somebody.
And Eve on Sunday afternoons is baking cookies. They have a baking group. No, that's not what the home groups are about.
Right.
And they're not necessarily about Bible studies either. And I think that's a common misconception even in student ministries that people get into, is that if you have small groups, they have to be Bible study groups. And the most successful small groups that we've had, yes, we do studies and we do study the Bible, but the priority, the main thing, is we're not getting together so that we can just grow deeper in, exegetical study of the scriptures. That's not what it's about.
Right. Well, in this book, Volunteer Youth Worker's Guide to Leading Small Groups, Marco even talks about that. He addresses the content of what his groups look like, the way they do them, and how, maybe a third of the time they I can't remember all of it right now, but a third of the time they do one thing, and the last third they'll do a lot of just conversation and chatting and hang out. But like that middle section of the group, they'll spend a significant amount of time in a lesson. But he describes the lesson as basically it's just dialogue. It's conversation that is centered around dialoguing about a topic. And so it's not necessarily, and I'm guessing that the topics are generally spiritually oriented, but or they could also be topically things that are relevant to kids' lives. But so there is content that is discussed and explored, but it's not necessarily an exegetical dig through. It's not like a precepts class.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you're going to take an epistle and just tear it down and, well, not tear it down, but to dissect it and go through every little nook and cranny of it.
Well, and even right now, we probably have some leaders listening who would disagree and say, no, small groups have to be. And, that's okay, because there are so many different ways to lead a small group. And if you want to be about small group Bible studies in your church, in your ministry, that's fine. We're not saying that that's bad, but we're saying that that's not the only way. There's not only one way. But he does talk about certain characteristics that need to be there, and you and I both agreed on this, but he talks about the value of consistency.
Right.
And it's not just, are we meeting on Fridays at 6 o'clock, but there's a consistency in showing up every week. There's a consistency in leadership that should be there. If it's just, hey, this is the seventh grade boys' Bible study, and one week you lead it, or not Bible study, but small group, and one week you lead it, and the next week I lead it, and the next week Adam leads it. It's great that they've got a consistent place and time to meet.
Right.
But the bad thing is, one week they start developing trust with you and they share something with you. Well, either now you've got to break that trust and share everything with me, so that when I show up the next week, I can be like, yeah, Scott told me that you were struggling with this, and so, yeah, how you doing? Which might be okay, but at the same time, it's hard to then go really deep with that student or any other student,
right?
If you're doing that a lot.
Yeah, well, and the consistency is critical in helping set up the, like he mentions it in this book here. He says consistency is needed for emotional and relational safety. Which is he describes it as a key value for great small groups, regularity, that consistency of meeting together and a lot of the same people. Not that somebody new can't join the group. In fact, I like the cell group idea.
Yeah.
But like we said, there's so many different ways to do it, and every way has its own benefits, but every way also has its degree of challenges.
Yeah.
The cell style, where a group of guys, maybe a group of middle school boys, are meeting together weekly, and They can bring their friends to it if their friend, you know, if they identify a friend that's on that level of being ready for a small group type of commitment. And so the group may grow, and then at some point it'll need to split or whatever. But it's also very advantageous. Like one of the, I know that the way Marco does it is, he stays with a group of middle school boys all the way through,
mm-hmm.
and he has them for several years. I know some churches will do it where they find adults that'll lead a small group starting at seventh grade or sixth grade, wherever they enter the youth group, and they stay with that group until they graduate.
Yeah.
And
graduating
so
leaders.
It becomes a 6 or 7 year commitment. Yeah. But then, and the nice thing with that is they get to identify different qualities in different students as they grow closer and closer and closer to them over the years. And then as those kids get older, they can hand over some of the leading elements to to the students, to where it becomes, in their high school years, more of a student-led group.
So one of the things that I found is, you know, like 7 years or 8 years is a long commitment.
It is.
And, you know, we live in an area where we get people from the military base coming down to our church. And so expecting them to be here for 7 or 8 years to pour into a kid's life is, it's not really realistic. And so I've learned a couple of things over the years. One is that it's okay. A one-year commitment can work. And the reason is the structure that these kids are in, with the exception of homeschoolers, is usually they have different teachers every year, right? So in elementary school, you have that one teacher all year long. But even now, like my kids are in elementary school, started doing like there was a science specialist that did, you know, computer science stuff and whatever. And they went to a reading person that did like the reading classes. But the rest of the stuff, or math, is a separate class.
Right.
Even in fifth grade. And I was like, oh, wow, that's different than we did it. We just had the one teacher teach all the subjects. And so then once they get into junior high and high school specifically, each subject is taught by a different teacher. And so there might be the one teacher that they start growing close with, but every year they're changing teachers. And so 1 year can work. Don't think that, if you can only get 1 year commitment, you can't have valuable small groups. You can grow really close with someone over the course of a year. Because remember, you're meeting in that small group. If you meet once a week, that's 52 meetings out of the year. And if that person also volunteers in youth ministry, they're seeing them twice or three times a week, right?
Right.
And not to mention that there's the possibility for contact outside of that actual small group meeting, a midweek text. Hey, praying for you guys. Hope everything's going okay. Or if that kid is going through something and they develop trust, they're going to reach out to you in the middle of the week with an email or a text or a message. On, you know, Messenger or whatever. Hey, struggling with some stuff, man. Can we talk?
Yeah.
And so there's value in that. The other thing is, if you can go a 1 or 2 year commitment, it doesn't scare away leaders from potentially signing up to be a small group leader. 2 years is great because, like for us, middle school was 7th, 8th grade. Now they just moved to 6th graders, and so even with a 2 year commitment, you get a lot more time to spend with that kid. Graduating leaders is not something that I've tried yet, but I see the value in that. I see the value in leaders who have had the same kid for the past 7 years, and it's like, wow, that's really cool.
My sister, I believe that's the setup that my sister does at her church. She's been leading a group of girls for years, and just loves those girls and grows incredibly close to them.
And I've seen versions, hybrid versions of that too, where they'll do the graduating thing, but they'll constrain it to middle school and high school. So if you're a middle school leader, you get a group of 6th graders and you have a 3-year commitment. You're with them 6th, 7th, 8th grade. When they go off to high school, you can re-up for another 3 years and start with a new 6th grade group and go 6th, 7th, 8th. If you're a high school leader, it's a 4-year commitment, 9th through 12th. And so,
yeah, there's all kinds of different ways to do it. So, and that's one of the things. So, full disclosure here, I don't have a small group system in my youth group. I tout the value of them.
Yes.
I know and understand how beneficial they can be. I currently do not have, nor have I had in the 6 years I've been at my church, a small group system that we've been using. And the reason is, so I have been thinking through how could I do it. I've been spending the last 2 years at least thinking through some of those things, and I'm right now getting to a point where I'm kind of on the verge of assembling a group of people to help me dialogue a little further about really moving forward and implementing something like that in our group. But it's going to be a slow dialogue. It's not something that's going to happen this year.
And you don't want to just jump into it, because if you don't have the structure in place, you got to understand your reasoning. Like, why are we doing small groups and what's the value? Maybe your ministry doesn't necessarily need the small group structure to work. I know you and I talked about this earlier, but we both have kind of a hybrid small group time built into our midweek group where we break off and we have discussion.
Based on the lesson. Yeah.
So we have a combined middle school, high school for worship and announcements and, you know, that kind of thing. And then while the middle schoolers are playing games, the high schoolers break off and they have what we call food for thought. We provide snacks. Actually, we have a cupboard dedicated to the high schoolers, and they can donate snacks. And so throughout the year, I say, hey, bring some snacks to share with everybody. And we'll just tear open a bag of chips or two, some dip, and a bottle of soda, and we'll just start sharing and talking about the lesson. But one of the things that he talks about is the long view. And when we had a podcast about this, where we talk about the macro versus the micro, are we in this for the short haul and long haul? And if you're going to do small groups, you really got to be looking at the long view. What's the big picture?
Right.
You're not going to be able to necessarily get results right now, today, after one small group meeting and say, okay, well, how many people attended? Because as we know, you know, butts and seats is not the defining factor of success in small groups or youth ministry.
Yeah, you can't look at just what are the short-term challenges. You got to look at what are the long-term challenges. And you can't look at just what your long-term goal is. You got to look at what the challenges are immediately that you got. We can look at the long view and ignore the short-term stuff just as easily. And so it's important to take your time and look at it all, because like something you said earlier in our offline dialogue, you had made a comment about no small group is better than a bad small group.
Yes.
And so that's why I've been going so slow at moving forward. This is, if I do this, I have to get it right.
Yeah.
And part of that is also knowing and understanding the community, the church community in which I'm doing it. And not just the church community, but the community itself. I live in a small town, and I minister in this small town, but there's a little bit of a draw from other small towns.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of small town thinking, not small mindedness.
Yeah.
Small town thinking is different than urban thinking.
Yeah.
And so I had to take all of these things into consideration. What time is available to the kids because of other commitments, sports and otherwise, and all of that kind of stuff.
You mentioned goals, and it's amazing because here I highlighted a chunk, and I'll just read it to you because he talks about goals. And he says, all the methodology in the world, all the brilliance in forming questions, all the listening skills, all the knowledge and understanding of teenagers, all the theological training you could possibly want won't do you much good if the small group values are misguided or mushy. And in the sidebar here, it says, goals are fine, but without values to guide us, we don't have a way of knowing if our goals are any good. So you got to ask yourself, not only what are your small group goals, but what are the values that you hold as a ministry when it comes to small group participation? Because that's going to determine what you're trying to get out of it.
Right.
And there was one in particular that you saw listed here. A value that Mark O states that he's committed to in his small groups that you agree with wholeheartedly.
I mean, I like all of them that he lists, but this one in particular, if I were just going to pick one, this is it. He says, we believe that wrestling with questions can be just as important as reaching answers. And, that is so valuable to me, because and part of it comes to the neuroscience. You know, a kid doesn't have to find the answers to a question for his brain to be stimulated, to be thinking more abstractly, because as they come into their adolescence years, they're shifting from concrete thinking to abstract thinking. And with all of those neurons that their brain has created leading into puberty, you have to challenge them to think abstractly. And so sometimes it's going to be questions that they can't get to an answer with, but they have to be taught, they have to be pushed to think on that level. It's not about them walking away with an understanding of everything or even anything at all. We help them to be able to process and to think abstractly about important spiritual things down the road by challenging them to think about those types of things now, even if they walk away without grasping it at all. So having a dialogue about the Trinity with students, some people would say that's just a total waste of time and creating a boondoggle of problems. I go there with my kids because they'll be able to grasp a certain amount of it, but leaving them with so much that they can't figure out keeps their minds dwelling on that and chewing on it and coming yeah. back to it again and again and again, and teaching them that it's okay. It's okay to not have the answers.
Absolutely.
It develops their brain as well as developing their spiritual formation.
Yeah, in the section that he titles Leading Great Discussions, he talks a little bit more about that, and he talks about the things that are not verbally communicated, which he calls that the hidden curriculum.
Right.
The things that you don't verbalize, but, for example, he says here, if you allow one kid to make interruptions but you always cut off another kid, it says something about you. So you got to pay attention to that. But he also talks about the null curriculum, the stuff that you don't talk about, right? For instance, if you never address sexuality, either because it makes you uncomfortable or because you think it's a subject better dealt with in another context, you implicitly teach your group that sexuality is a taboo subject that shouldn't be talked about anywhere. And if you're going to make small groups, if you're going to have a successful small group, it's got to be a place where the kids feel comfortable and able to share about things, even if it's something like I am wrestling with my sexuality. Right. My sexual identity, gender identity, you know, they've got to be able to come in. And if they can't share it there, then where are they going to share it?
Right.
You know, and the beauty of them feeling safe enough to share it in that context is if it is a loving place where they feel accepted regardless of their beliefs, then they're able to then go deeper and explore, well, what does the Bible have to say about that?
Right. Well, and the reality is, it's not just teaching that a topic is taboo. The reality is, if we don't go there in dialogue with the kids, with teens about that, they're not getting the biblical perspective, the godly perspective that they have to be informed on what God thinks of all of this stuff. And the problem is we just think, oh, we'll just delay the conversation. The reality is the world is not delaying the conversation. The world is promoting their agenda every time the kids turn around. And so if we aren't talking about it, they're only getting the world's perspective. And they grow up thinking that that is all okay because the world is teaching them. And we've surrendered the voice. We've surrendered our voice to the world. You know, one of the things I appreciate about this was in a chapter titled Thinking Structure, he talks about, you know, what type of group do you have? And he talks about single gender versus mixed gender. He talks about splitting middle school and high school or having them together. He talks about single grade versus mixed grade. And I would add into that, he talks about homogeneous versus affinity groups versus other. And I would even throw into the mix, you know, having an adult-led group or a student-led group with adult oversight. And I think it's important to have adult oversight, but I ran a very successful student-led cell group ministry at a previous church that I was at, and it was absolutely fantastic. The students did the leading, but there was a trained adult there that was ready to deal with whatever popped up, questions that that they didn't have answers for, to help guide them on how to begin to find the answers and all that kind of stuff. And it was absolutely fantastic. But one of the things I've looked at in my current context is, and come to realize for various reasons I won't get into, I can't get away with that structure in my current place.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is no particular structure is the best. No particular, setting, you know, whether you're meeting in homes or whether you're meeting at the church is necessarily the best.
Right.
But you know your small, you know your youth group the best. And so you got to understand what's going to work for them. And don't be afraid to try stuff.
Right.
You know, I know that we had small groups and a moment of confession earlier, you said that you don't have small groups, neither do we. Yeah. We did when I got here, but I was the guy that killed small groups. And the reason is I had to basically lay down a metric and say, you know, do we have successful small groups here? And the answer, as hard as it was to admit, was no, we don't. And so it was something that had started before I got here. And I don't know if it was always this way, but really there were maybe one or two small groups that were kind of doing it right. Every single other small group was just kind of going through these motions, and they were just discussion hangout times. And, you know, yeah, I had to pull the plug. Yeah. And so we're still looking for a place to reintroduce small groups.
And a lot
now.
Of the decision on when to pull the plug on things like that comes down to, what is the purpose? Is it educational? Is it Bible study? Is it activity? Is it, yeah. What is the purpose Absolutely. Of the small group setup?
I think one of the key things, what you said earlier, was about helping students develop a biblical worldview. And I think that's really the purpose of the small groups.
Right.
And not specifically just a Bible study, not just a hangout time, but to basically navigate through life and life issues with peers, being poured into by somebody who's been there and done that. And it reminds me of one of my favorite quotes from C.S. Lewis. This comes from Learning in Wartime. And he writes, "To be ignorant and simple now, not to be able to meet the enemies on their own ground, would be to throw down our weapons and betray our uneducated brethren who have under God no defense but us against the intellectual attacks of the heathen. Good philosophy must exist, if for no other reason, because bad philosophy needs to be answered."
Right.
And so it's our job as youth leaders to understand our teens, understand the culture that they're living in, understand the stuff that they're going through, even if it's something we've never gone through, and see it from their perspective and be able to provide a biblical answer. Now, there are times when they're going through stuff that's just so crazy and out there that we don't have a clear answer for. And it's tough sometimes to say, you know what, this is one of those things, we're just going to trust God.
Yeah.
And there are times when you're talking with a teen and it's going to end with both of you in tears, just, you know, all you can do is pray for that teen. But that's no small thing.
Right.
You know, and so if nothing else, it communicates, hey, you're loved. Yeah, I'm here with you going through this. I am suffering with you. And you just keep reiterating that to them, not just by your words, but by your actions, and they'll get through it, you know. And so the value of small groups, yes, absolutely. If you've been thinking about starting small groups, I would encourage you to go through this resource. There are a lot of other great resources out there. This isn't the end-all be-all. He even says it in the very end of the book. His very last bit is titled Stop Reading, and he even says, yep. Listen, this is, you know, reading this book is not going to make you an expert small group leader. It doesn't have all the answers, but basically go out there and lead a small group.
Yeah, it brings out some fantastic points for dialoguing about small groups in youth ministry, but it's only one voice to add into a vast library of small group resources out there. But it is very good. It's concise, and it's got a lot of great, great discussion starters in it. And that's one of the things I would probably say is critical if you're looking at starting a small group program. Don't do it alone.
Oh yes.
Don't think through on your own. So I've been thinking through the last couple of years, but now it brings me to this place where I'm going to bring in some others to dialogue with me about it.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring in some parents and some of the leaders, and we're going to talk. It can't just be you. It's got to be a movement from some kind of group.
Well, if you've got at least one student of each gender in your small group, you already necessitate having another leader.
That would be two.
Yes. And so if you've got two guys and two gals in your small group or in your youth group of four, well, then I would strongly suggest, and then we didn't talk about this earlier, I don't think, that men should lead a small group with dudes, and women should lead the small group with gals, unless you have a mixed gender small group.
Right.
That's just my recommendation.
But then if you're going to do that, you might consider couples to lead those groups as opposed to, you know, even a guy and a girl.
Yeah, absolutely. And so either way, I mean, you're going to need at least one other person.
Yep.
To help you lead small group. I know there's a couple of times in my previous ministry. It was a smaller ministry, but my wife, who wasn't really on the books as a small group leader, but she would show up every once in a while and she would lead with me. And it was kind of weird, because on the days that she showed up, were the days that the girls were going through some girl stuff and they really needed a mom type figure to talk to, not a dad type figure. And we would break up and say, okay, honey, why don't you go talk to these girls and let them unload on you whatever's bugging them. And so the lesson plan would go out the window and we'd have
there's value in having a dad type there with girls, because some girls come from homes where their dads are either they aren't literally physically aren't there in the home, or their dads largely ignore them or berate them or whatever. They don't have good father figures, and so you can become that to the girls in a mixed gender group. Yeah. But you've really got to think through all the reasons on why you're going to do it and what your outcome goals really are before you just jump into a model.
Absolutely. Well, once again, strongly encouraging picking up this 3-pack of books by Marco, Volunteer Youth Workers Guide series. And if you lead small groups, or if you've been thinking about leading small groups, you got questions, or maybe you got comments or suggestions, touch on something that we didn't touch on, feel free to contact us. You can find us on our website. That's eclectic.com, eklectic.com. You can email us. We are podcast@eclectic.com. Once again, eklectic. You can find us on Twitter @eclectic, on Facebook, we're facebook.com/IamEclectic, and we're also on iTunes, so feel free to like us and share us. We really appreciate that. Rate us up on iTunes, man, thank you for listening. I'm Rob.
I'm Scott.
Stay eclectic. Once again, it was to stay eclectic.
Yeah. I tried to jump ahead with it.
I'm Rob. I'm Scott. Stay eclectic. Oh, wait. I forgot to hit record.
Oh, not again.
I'm just kidding.